Hello and welcome to the Writer's Block. Yes, people, it's the Writer's Block. It's 10 p.m. here in lovely Skopje, Macedonia. It's dark, it's bleak, it's cold. My central heating is broken and we are cooking without gas. With me here tonight, we have Riley, sometimes known as Edward Slav Squat, to discuss the latest happenings in Mother Russia and the greatest country in the world, Kazakhstan, of course. And that is my ridiculous Borat impression. And we're going to keep the Borat impressions to a minimum because this is a serious matter of state and geopolitics and global domination by an evil cabal. Riley, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
That is lovely. That is, I'm happy when you are happy, Riley. And you know what makes me happy? Alaska Chaga Tea. They are the best sponsors a podcaster could have, a best sponsor a live streamer could have. Alaska Chaga. It's full of, I want to say electrolytes. I think the guy in Idiocracy said electrolytes, but it's not. It's actually full of antioxidants. And the smell is just divine. The smell is just If I could live stream smell. Well, we are live here on the Countercurrents, DLive, and Odyssey channels. And as it happens, we are taking donations and we are taking questions. We are taking your comments, questions, hurtful remarks, even comments of praise. Anyone want to comment on how well-dressed I am? Now is the time. You have the entropy link. And if our heroic moderators would just drop that into the chat, though, I would be eternally grateful to them. But that's the crass financial concerns out of the way. Riley, you run a Substack blog. Now, usually when I get on Twitter, I see Substack and bio, I unsub. That's just the kind of guy I am. But in your case, I made an exception because you have a unique voice. You occupy a unique space in the, let's call it, the dissident thought space. You occupy a unique perspective. And you have been working very hard to expose the reality of COVID tyranny as is in Russia. So if you would briefly introduce yourself, what you are about, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. So my name is Riley Wagaman. I'm from California native, actually. So I'm an American. I got my start writing actually in Washington, D.C. And at the time I was, you know, basically a tree hugger liberal, to put it mildly. Basically, you know, with the when Obama came to power, I just realized, like, I hate politics and everything about it, and I hate my life. And I moved to Central Europe, and I lived in the Czech Republic. Not in Prague and Brno, so I wasn't a tourist. I just sort of drifted eastward, and I ended up in Russia. And I started writing again, and I started writing for a site called Russia Insider, which was actually quite popular a few years ago, but sort of closed down operations after a few years, unfortunately. And in that meantime, I also got a job working for Press TV, the Iranian state media channel. And I was their Moscow correspondent. And then a few years after that, I got a job working at RT. And I worked for the website. And my official position was senior editor, but basically I was just a writer. I don't know why they gave me that title. It was sort of an honorary thing. And I've done a lot of weird stuff while I've been in Russia. Like, I've been here about 6 or 7 years now, and I made 2 press tours to Donbass, which was really interesting, quite illuminating. I've been to Kazakhstan. I went to Kazakhstan to cover some Syrian peace, you know, conference in Astana. And now I quit my job at RT and I'm doing the Substack thing. And like you said, I've just been writing about the realities in Russia that nobody seems to be wanting to cover. And really, one of the reasons why I quit RT is because they absolutely refused to even discuss the realities of what was happening in Russia. And for RT, it was especially hypocritical because RT is quite vocal about, I mean, they'll publish all these op-eds, calling, the French government tyrannical for having domestic, QR code passes, and which is, legitimate, but they will not touch anything even remotely critical about what's happening in Russia. And I just couldn't, it's ridiculous. And the problem is, now you have a situation where no media organization is willing to just tell the truth, because you have either the RTs or the sort of Russophile, Putinphile media, the alt media, whatever you want to call it. And then you have, the Moscow Times and the New York Times and all these, garbage sites that actually love lockdowns and QR codes, and they're not going to badmouth anything. Anyway, so that's sort of a little off topic, but that's a little bit about myself and what I've been doing recently.
Well, no, no topic is off topic on the writer's block. It's a free form structure. I like these to keep these things informal because I'm not a very structured thinker. And I expect my guests to provide the structure for me. But I see that the chat is abuzz with activity. They are commenting on how well dressed I am. Well, thank you for that. There's
Oh,
someone
nice.
saying I look upper middle class. We have banned this person and dispatched a team of assassins to his house. And Slog has donated 14 lemons, but I think people want to know chiefly about Kazakhstan. Now, I do understand your main focus on blogging is the COVID tyranny in Russia, but there has
Yeah.
also been severe COVID tyranny in Kazakhstan preceding these protests, and people are calling it a coup d'etat. I don't know what to call it. Now, my go-to place, because I don't trust the Western mainstream media, I assume they're lying to me all the time.
Sure.
And what I've read on your blog about the reality is of the Russian media and quote unquote Russophile media, alternative media, has made me doubt their pronouncements as well. So I open RT and they're telling me one story about what's going on in Kazakhstan. I open the New York, well, I don't. Because I already
Right.
know what they're going to say, and life is too short to read the New York Times. But
Absolutely.
if you would, to the best of your knowledge, to the best of your what you understand about the situation, give us a picture of what's going on in Kazakhstan with context, with well, what's going on over there? What's Borat doing?
Okay, well, I just want to preface this by also saying I am not an expert in Kazakhstan. And one of the funniest things about this whole Kazakhstan brouhaha is like the Kazakhstan thing breaks out and everyone suddenly is an expert on Kazakhstan, right? Everyone has their hot take. And it's like, do people actually really know what's going on in Kazakhstan? I'm not convinced at all. I'm not convinced at all that anybody really knows what they're talking about. So I want to preface whatever I'm about to say. I'm not even sure what I'm going to say, but I'm not an expert in Kazakhstan. This is just my perspective sitting here in Moscow, Russia. But like you said, I am also quite suspicious. So I think a lot of people, like you said, they're going to read Reuters and the New York Times, which says these were spontaneous protests ignited by anger over a rise in fuel prices. I mean, that's really sort of the mainstream narrative, more or less. And that just doesn't really make any sense to me. Like, there's got to be more going on here. But then on the other side, the RTs and the, Russophile media, you have this is a top-down Western op, CIA flew in, ISIS fighters, blah, blah, blah. Totally 100% fabricated color revolution. My opinion is that we're somewhere in the middle here. And people don't want to accept that, and that there is a many, many good reasons to suspect, and there's a lot of evidence that there's huge popular anger against the regime in Kazakhstan. And okay, where to start? I mean, for example, a really interesting coincidence is a lot of people point to the timing of what happened. They say, okay, maybe there are people who are really upset. But the timing of what happened in Kazakhstan, it coincides with all these tensions in Ukraine. It comes right before the talks with, the US-Russia talks that are coming up. This has to be somehow connected. And I think that's a fair argument to make.
Briefly, Riley, there are Russia-American talks, or more precisely, NATO CTSO talks. If you would elaborate on that, I'm not sure people are aware of them.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, I'm referring though to the Geneva talks, right? That's where they're
Right.
being held. Is that correct? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even an expert on the talks. I haven't been following even the talks that well, to be perfectly honest.
Well, you
There
know they're
are
taking place, which makes you more expert than
talks are
me. And
taking place, guys. They're talking, all right? They're about to talk. It's really important. All right? Look, okay. So people are like, okay, these talks are coming up. Everybody is positioning their chess pieces. There's these random protests, seemingly random protests. This has to be connected some way. I think that's a fair argument to make. I'm not saying that that's stupid to say. What I am saying, though, is that if you take that same perspective and you look at the situation in Kazakhstan, it's not unreasonable to point out that there's actually like a lot of reasons why there would just be a natural protest in Kazakhstan right now. For example, on January 5th, which was, I guess, just four days ago, they were ratcheting up their already totally insane QR code system, which is total. I mean, it's like almost Chinese level. They have like different colors for whether you're like suspicious COVID, semi-COVID positive, you touch someone who might have COVID. They even restrict you by the people that you came in contact with in Kazakhstan. So it's not even like if you got your two clot shots, you're safe. Like they will restrict your access to things based on who they think you come in contact with. It's a really, really serious, extreme version of what we're seeing around the world. And so they were expanding this system and it was coming into place in January 5th, which, it's like right around when all the craziness started. And the fuel price hike thing, in my opinion, does have some truth to it, because we're talking about a country that was already had severe economic hardships, totally, totally oppressed. These crazy forced vax, cattle tag system, COVID measures, the worst that you can find in the world. And people's fuse, what's the right term? People were like, all right, enough. I can see
Yeah,
that being a totally
I
legitimate
heard
argument.
that the straw that broke the camel's back was requiring a QR code to access your money at the bank.
Right. Yeah. So the January 5th, as I understand it, the requirements coming into place on January 5th was post office and banks. Maybe someone has better intel, but that's how I understand it, is that they were expanding this system to banks and post offices. Here's the thing about if you go back and look at the coverage, I think even if you went back and looked at RT's coverage, my understanding, and please someone correct me if I'm wrong, is that at least for the first 12 to 18 hours, there was no reports of any serious violence that I saw. It was like people marching through the streets and they like surrounded the government building and the government resigned. I'm pretty sure that was the case. And if there was violence, it wasn't, I didn't see a lot of reports about it. And then the next day, things got really crazy. The point I'm trying to make though is that, and again, I'm not whitewashing any kind of shenanigans that undoubtedly are taking place and did take place, but that my argument is that there's clearly real, genuine anger against this government, which is a disgusting, anti-human, depraved, filthy, corrupt government. And it's especially bad because I'm, and myself, and I think a lot of people, are disgusted with the forced vaccinations, disgusted with the digital cattle tagging going on all around the world. And then you have a country that has some of the worst COVID policies in the world. People march on the government, and then people start demanding that they're violently suppressed. Like, I just don't get that. That just makes me very, very uncomfortable. It makes me very, very uncomfortable because I really feel like people aren't actually ready for freedom, they're just going to revert to these sort of geopolitical, like LARPing games, where it's like, oh well, but if Kazakhstan was had a real revolution, what would happen to like China's Belt and Road Initiative, and how would that affect like Russia's astronaut station? It's like, who gives a shit? I mean, okay, give a shit. You're allowed to give a shit, but I'm just saying, like, people need to realize that this is like, what do you want from these people? They're like totally, they're like a boot is stomping on their face repeatedly, and when they have the courage to stand up, people are like, oh, well, there's like a few sketchy groups with guns doing crazy things, so now we have to suppress it, and it's cool. And to me, that makes me very, very uncomfortable. It really does. And you know, the reality is, I just looked at this the other day. The ambassador, the Kazakh ambassador to Moscow, gave this interview, I guess yesterday, saying that there's no obvious external interference. There's no obvious external interference in what happened in Kazakhstan.
But the Kazakh government alleges that the protesters are quote unquote terrorists. And I mean, there have been people, I believe, there were people in Almaty flown in from Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan, maybe to specifically for rioting. So we do not rule out CIA shenanigans, right? We're just
So,
saying there
okay,
is
look.
legitimate, right?
So here's the thing about those stories, which again, I'm not discrediting all of them. I'm leaving all possibilities open. I don't pretend to know exactly what happened, but I know this is a real concrete case. The story about the Kyrgyzstan, you know, terrorists being flown in. There was a really interesting story about one of these guys who confessed to being a terrorist, who is obviously, you can see on the video, his face is all beaten up. This guy was a jazz player. He was a jazz pianist who tours in Kazakhstan, and his like wife and his like friends identified him on Instagram. You know, I mean, it's
Wait, so
Kazakhstan.
he's a Kyrgyz, right? In Kazakhstan, but he's a jazz pianist, and someone
So
made
they just
an
grab some foreigners who are already in the country, beat the shit out of them, and they're like, yes, I did it. Like, I'm the terrorist.
don't
That's
know.
one example. Okay, I don't
One
know
of
if.
my favorite Russian jokes, Riley, and you may know it, is you know the joke about the CIA, FBI, and KGB competing, which is the best service?
I think I know that one. I think I know that one.
Okay, so the FBI, they try the CIA and the KGB are competing which is the best service. Sidebar here, from serious geopolitical concerns into raucous comedy. The CIA goes first, and they're trying to catch the rabbit in the forest, and they go in, and you know all sorts of things happen in the night. Airplanes fly in, drugs are smuggled in. Weapons, humans, or human organs, giant pallets of cash. And the agent comes out and said, well, we did not find the rabbit, but we did topple the lion's rule and replaced it with the People's Republic of Wolves. And they promise us, if they can stabilize the economy and the situation, that in 5 years they can deliver to us the rabbit. The KGB, I mean, okay, we can leave out the FBI. The KGB goes in, it takes them 5 hours. And then they take out a bear, and the bear has a broken arm, the arm in a sling, and there's a bandage over its head and a broken nose. And the bear says, I'm a rabbit. My father was a rabbit. My grandfather was a rabbit. Me and my entire family, we are rabbits and nothing but rabbits. And so the KGB caught the rabbit. And this reminds me of this joke, if this is true. Now, again, we are going on speculation unless we get boots on the ground. I am tempted to go to Kazakhstan, but I'm not vaccinated, so I cannot travel just to find out what's going on. But I might be end up beaten up and admitting to being a
Okay,
terrorist.
yeah.
So who knows?
So, okay, that story about the jazz pianist, I feel pretty confident about because I checked out. There's like reports on it. I can send you links later. But one thing I wanted to mention is I do have a friend who lived in Kazakhstan for a few years, and he actually left. But he was messaging his friends back in Kazakhstan, saying like, "Hey, what's really going on there? What's the deal?" And they basically said there are real, peaceful, legitimate protests. But there's also these like weird armed elements that are like looting and burning shit down, and like nobody knows what their deal is. And there are also reports of just like, basically whatever you want to call them, like Islamic extremists or whatever, just fanatics, just, popping in, having a good time. And how organized are they and who's behind them? Who knows? It could also just be like YOLO, could just be like dudes being like, all right, time to have, like, let's do this, I think that's like not an impossible option.
It's
So
definitely
I
a
don't know.
possibility. I mean, whenever you have basically collapse of government, you're going to have collapse of law. You're going to have opportunistic crime, right?
Exactly. And I've heard that there's actually a lot of sort of organized crime that are involved in a lot of the violence and looting going on in Kazakhstan right now. So how, to what extent and so on and so forth, I'm not qualified to say. I'm just saying I think that people really, really should think carefully before, again, just reverting to this default, like, oh, like, Russia good, anything that happens near Russia is call the revolution, CIA, PSYOP, or whatever. I do think that there's some truth to that. I don't think it's the whole story though, especially in this situation. And I just hope that people will find, like, I think that taking a nuanced position on this one is really important because it's gonna suck. It's really gonna suck for all of us if 6 months from now we're forced to go out into the streets and like protest for our lives and we get labeled terrorists and liquidated. And then everyone on Twitter is like, oh, they were like color revolution, And it's like,
You
no.
are obviously, because you're an American living in Moscow, you're obviously
But
CIA.
I just mean in general, it's like it's so easy. It's so easy to label people who just, with legitimate grievances and just be like, oh, they're like CIA shills or, blah, blah, blah. And media does this on both sides. On both sides, they do it. So.
What's amazing to me as someone who actually lived through a color revolution here in Macedonia in 2017 is, and someone who regrettably marched as part of it, and I kick myself for doing it every day of my life, our grievances were legitimate, right? We had legitimate grievances with regard to corruption, and I mean, I'm not a big believer in democratic processes, but there was corruption, there was graft. People were unfairly sacked. People were unfairly prosecuted and imprisoned, including members of my family. And I protested against that. And then what was done was this was instrumentalized by foreign and domestic enemies of Macedonia to install a hostile regime, which then humiliated a country, destroyed our economy, and is now imposing whatever COVID tyranny they can muster. They cannot muster as much as the Russian or the Kazakh or the French state because we have experienced state apparatus failure here in Macedonia. So it's basically we're lucky that the state is weak and corrupt. So we can sort of slip through the cracks. If they could, they would tyrannize us worse. And I was recently really talking about this with a friend of mine who is. He's more pro-Russian than me. I mean, I'm not anti-Russian, right? But I'm not exactly head over heels in love with Russia. And he said, you're really in a bind, right? If you go out and protest and demand the resignation, your cause can be instrumentalized by these nefarious actors, right? By these evil fucks. I'm just gonna come out and say it, by these evil fucks. But what does that mean? You're not allowed to protest anything? You're not allowed to say my government is corrupt, even if it is corrupt.
It's crazy. That's just like that's ridiculous.
Right. It's a very I believe your people call it a Morton's fork. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. So
And so, and also, sorry not to cut, but the thing with Kazakhstan, which I find so funny too, is that Kazakhstan wasn't necessarily like a extremely pro-Russia government. I mean, they took money and they were willing to, pimp themselves, whore themselves out to basically anyone. And of course, they did have economic and security links to Russia, obviously, but it wasn't so straight cut. And the point that I made also when I've been writing about this, it's like, so like, what are people really, at the end of the day, if you really want to sort of like Just get to the very basic roots of this. If you're just a normal dude in Kazakhstan, is it really going to be like, oh, my QR code is more like anti-NATO than yours or whatever? It's like you're still getting cattle tagged either way. Like, who cares? And so I don't want to sound like a nihilist, but like if I was just a normal Kazakh guy, I'd be like, what am I fighting? Like, why would I even care if there was a color revolution in my country? What could they possibly do to me that's worse than what they're already doing to me? I don't
Yeah.
and I don't know if there's even a good answer to that. And what I
There
find
is
interesting is that
probably something, there's always something worse than
there's
can
always
happen.
something, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad now. But here's the thing, like I think that here's what I would say. If you're like really 100% like what the crackdown on the protest was good, this was an evil color revolution, which okay, it's a fair argument to make. I really think that people should have to defend the government that they're basically supporting being propped up, because I don't think this government is like,
Yeah.
it's a trash government. It's a totally trashy government. And so and again with the in my perspective, like the way that I'm coming at stuff now, from especially from the COVID tyranny, as you put it, like have we lost connection to like our basic humanity? And I know that sounds really corny and cheesy to say, but I think it's like a important question to ask. And a lot of the sort of political analysis and the 5D chess that you read about on blogs is so disconnected from basic humanity. It's like, oh well, we need to crush these innocent protesters because it's good for China or whatever. Just doesn't make any sense to me, just at a human level.
It could be good for China, it could be good for Russia, but you got to think about yourself. I don't know about
Right.
you, Riley, but I'm a nationalist, right? I'm a Macedonian nationalist, and might sound selfish, but I always ask the question: is this thing which I am doing or which I'm
Right.
supporting good for my people? Because
Right.
otherwise, what's the point? I come at this from an identitarian viewpoint. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but you certainly seem not to be allergic to it, which is positive. And you gotta think about, is this thing going to hurt us as a
Right.
people? And by this I mean you, your family, your nation. Or so yeah, okay. If it's good for Russia, a salute to the Russians, bully for you. But again,
But is
is
it good
this
for Kazakhs? Do the normal Kazakhs care? Like, I don't know. We should ask them. It'd be great to just to talk to some Kazakh people and be like, hey, like, what do you guys actually want?
I've heard it alleged, I don't know if you can clear this up. Kazakhstan has a significant Russian minority, and our moderators in the chat have been kind enough to give us an ethnic breakdown. 68.5% Kazakh, 19% Russian, 3% Uzbek, 1.5% Uyghur. There's Ukrainians, Tatars, and Germans, and 4.5% others. I know for a fact there are even some Macedonians living in Kazakhstan. It's a very long story, but yeah, there are there. What do you think is the position of the Russian minority in Kazakhstan with regard to these things?
Well, I'm sure that they would be overjoyed if Russia even expanded its presence in Kazakhstan, because again, the people should realize that the Kazakh government, I mean, it has actually taken it's I think it's sort of cynically used nationalism to its in a way where, they basically just want to drum up patriotism while they just, steal and thieve from, the country. So my understanding is, again, I'm not an expert on this, but that the Russian ethnic minority is sort of not treated very well in Kazakhstan. I mean that's what I've heard. That's what I've read at least. So I'm sure that the Russians living in Kazakhstan would love Russia to probably stay in Kazakhstan. And I know actually I'm friends with some, I guess you would call them Russian nationalists, who are hoping that this will transform into some sort of, Donbass situation where they could like cut off parts of Kazakhstan for Russia. And I'm just like, for me, that's just like, I don't know, guys, whatever. But anything's possible now, Anything is possible now.
I'm not sure if the Russians in Kazakhstan live in contiguous areas or areas contiguous with
Right.
Russia, Right. I think
Right.
they're more like an urban population where you cannot, you cannot annex.
Right, you can't just like cut
Yeah.
out like a section.
Yeah, and I think they're very concentrated in Almaty, and Almaty is on the Uzbek border almost. So,
So it would be pretty tough to do. It'd be pretty tough to
yeah,
do.
it's but historically speaking, and a little Soviet history. Correct me if I'm wrong, Riley. If you're, but the Soviet Union had the had the habit of internally resettling people, and especially Russians, in order to break apart the ethnic cohesion of places. Now, for example, to this day, Estonia has a 20% Russian minority, and this is the stabilizing factor of Estonia. This was written about very extensively in the 90s in the aftermath of the Yugoslav wars, where people were worried that the violence could spill over to the former Soviet Union. They call it the min-maj rule, the minority-majority rule, where a country has a minority bordered by a and it is also bordered by a country where the minority ethnic group is the majority. And of course, the model was Croatia and Serbia. You know, Croatia and Serbia, they share a border, and Croatia had a Serbian minority. And of course, Serbia and Albania, and Serbia had at the time an Albanian minority. In Albania and Macedonia, we had conflicts in 2001, and this is again a destabilizing factor. And Russia has it with almost all of her neighbor states. And this was a deliberate policy in Soviet times. For a time, Russians were the majority ethnic group of Kazakhstan because of these forced resettlements. A lot of Russians were moved into the Baltic states. A lot of Russians were moved into a lot of the Central Asian state, the stans, as they like to call them, for this particular reason. So, that's something to think about. That's something to think about. Of course, that's just an episode of history. It's not the first time that empires have used migration and settlement as a weapon preceding war or as a weapon of war. Because this just gives casus belli. So Russia is never going to be not involved in Kazakhstan as long as there is a significant, Russian minority over there. And it can always claim we are just protecting these 18% of the population, which are
Absolutely.
Russian. Which I would, if I were the Russian state, I would protect these people. I would be involved in Kazakhstan specifically for these people. It's not, I'm not judging the Russians for looking out for their own interests,
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not surprised by what Russia has done at all. That's, I'm not. That's not sort of my argument here. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
So I think that is our comments on the Kazakh question, unless you have anything to add, Riley.
No, I mean, I think we got it all.
Well, anyways, we have a donation and a question from Gadius Maximus for $10, and he asks, what are the chances that the globalist American empire sends its transgender battalions to Kazakhstan to protect democracy?
That's a really good question. Gosh, I don't know. I think it's not very likely. I mean, what do you think? I don't really have anything to say to that except I just don't think it's likely.
It's we have seen from the Afghani example that it's a question of logistics, right? From where would these troops come? I don't think does the USA have big bases in the region? Turkmenistan, maybe.
Good question.
And you cannot just barge into Russia's neighborhood like that. I mean, last time, what happened in Ukraine, this attempt to expand NATO all the way to the Russian frontier, there's going to be some significant Russian pushback. The Chinese are not going to like it. If America does that, it could very well trigger World War, which is probably why we're seeing this piggybacking on popular support instead of more direct action. Maybe the American Empire wants to destabilize Kazakhstan and then destabilize Russia by proxy, but not involve itself because America has its own problems, I guess. So I would say the
Yeah, I agree with
probability
that.
is very low.
Very low. But not impossible. Anything's possible, guys. So.
Yeah, it's not impossible. So I think we have exhausted the subject of Kazakhstan, but we still have an even bigger country to tackle. Very few countries in the world are bigger than Kazakhstan, but one of them is Russia. I know Kazakhstan, greatest country in the world. All other country run by little girl. But we have to talk about Russia. Now, Russia has its own vaccine. Russia has its own problems with COVID tyranny. So let's start with the Sputnik vaccine. Everyone I speak to says, oh, this is safer than the Western vaccines, right? The Western ones will give you a heart attack, and they will. But
Yeah, they're clot shots, guys. Don't take those. Please don't do that.
But what about the Russian vaccine? What about Sputnik?
No, it's also trash, guys. I'm sorry to report that to you. It doesn't bring me any joy, okay? I just want to preface this with, like, I'm not happy. One of the nicest things that someone ever wrote to me on my Substack, it was a comment that said, I really regret finding your blog that they like destroyed. But it was like the nicest comment you can get as a writer. It was like, I really, really, really regret finding your blog. I was like, oh, thank you so much.
But in a good
Okay,
way.
but yeah, in a good way. He was like, this just like shattered my whole worldview. And like, I'm devastated. It was really funny. Okay, I mean, it's hard to even know where to start. Maybe you should just like pepper me with questions, but I'll just try to put down the baseline facts on
I
Sputnik.
want to encourage the chat to send us
Yeah.
questions. Again, you can send us through Entropy, paid super chats through Entropy. But if you pose a very interesting a question I think is interesting in the regular chat, I'll read it out to Riley and he'll answer it as
Yeah,
well.
please.
We
Because you
are
know
here to
the
answer your questions about the Russian vaccine tonight. So just fire away if you're interested. So
Yeah.
just let's start at the
Sure.
beginning. Who developed this thing, right?
Right. Yeah, okay. So this is a major part of the story and why you should be super sketched out by Sputnik 5. So Sputnik 5 is allegedly developed by the Gamaleya Center, which is operated by the Russian Health Ministry. And allegedly, it was also in partnership with the Russian Defense Ministry, but I don't know how involved they are in. But that's another thing. The thing, though, about the Gamaleya Center is that it's a fucking scam. It's like a embezzlement racket, basically. The guy who runs it, this guy, Alexander Ginsberg, very Russian name, right? He's been the director of the Gamaleya
Is he
Center.
related to Ruth what's her run Ruth Allen Ginsburg? Ruth Bader. Ruth Bader,
Maybe,
right.
maybe, maybe. Okay, so Ginsberg has been director of the Gamaleya Center for 20 years, and he has never brought a vaccine to market, ever. Ever. And they have this whole song and dance where they say, oh, Sputnik 5 is different than, the mRNA, because it's this, viral vector platform, and they have this adenovirus, and it transports the genetic material, and it's way safer. They've tried developing these vaccines on multiple occasions, and they have never, ever gotten anything approved outside of Russia. And even in Russia, some of them have not been approved. The first adenovirus, viral vector vaccine that Gamaleya developed ended in an embezzlement scandal, a straight up embezzlement scandal. And actually, it's a really interesting story because it wasn't actually, my understanding is that it was Ginsberg who, I believe at the time, I'm not sure if he was connected with the Gamaleya Center, but he partnered with this company called RusNano, which is operated by Anatoly Chubais. And it's this whole, this is this this Russian state funded company that was supposed to specialize in sort of like these future nanotechnologies and new pharmaceutical techs. And it was a total scam. And in fact, I'm pretty sure they just went like bankrupt. They like halted trading
When you
of
say
RusNano.
embezzlement, someone
Yeah.
stole money from they stole money from the state, or
Right. Yeah. They stole money from what was allocated to develop this drug. Anyway, there's like huge amounts of corruption involved with Gamaleya. And I'll give you, this is like the perfect example. And there's many of them. Okay, another thing is, the reason everybody calls it Sputnik V, but the reality is that you should call it Sputnik 5, because it's the fifth vaccine that Gamaleya has tried to develop, and all previous four failed. So the big example,
I'm sorry.
Oh.
Just carry on. I'll tack it on
Okay,
later.
sorry. I thought you were leading in for a comment. Okay, guys, here's okay. First of all, there's many examples of like the scam, but this is the one of the funniest ones. So in 2015, there was this whole like Ebola outbreak in Africa. Actually, no, I guess it started in like 2014, something like that. Anyway, mid, you know what I'm talking about.
It was
So
Obama time. Yeah.
it was Obama time. It was Obama time, right? And there was this whole Ebola scare, blah blah blah. And so countries from around the world, including China, interestingly enough, and the US and blah blah, all these other guys, they started this race, this like Ebola vaccine race, which was very interesting. It has many similarities to what happened with COVID. And so Russia got in on this, and they Gamaleya developed this Ebola viral vector vaccine, basically using the same technology that Sputnik allegedly uses. So the Ebola epidemic ends in 2016, in June 2016, and ends in Guinea. And right after it ends, Gamaleya sends in their vaccine and starts like giving it to people. And so of course, like nobody gets Ebola. And so they're like, oh, it's like 100% success rate. Like, in an Ebola-free country, they're like, oh yeah, it's like perfect, like works so well. And before this even happened, there was this whole scandal where the vaccine had passed phase like one and two trials, but there was like no evidence that these trials had even taken place. They had been like registered like officially with the Russian Health Ministry, and there was this huge scandal. Some organization that's connected with Russian pharmaceuticals was like, where is like the evidence that these trials even took place? Like, you guys registered stuff that doesn't seem to even ha have happened. So, I mean, it's like a scam right from the beginning, we're talking about. And
And the Ministry of Health was in on it.
well, okay, not maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but remember too, the Ministry of Health operates Gamaleya Center. So it's like when you hear, oh, but the Russian Health Ministry like approved this vaccine, it's the same people. It's like, okay, but here's the best part is that Gamaleya uses this Ebola vaccine as proof that of how like safe and effective Sputnik 5 is. This vaccine has never left Russia. It was tested on 2,000 Africans after the Ebola, ended in Guinea. They never published the results. You can't find them anywhere, and they never got registration outside of Russia. And it's so funny because you can go and listen to these people talk about this vaccine, and they'll say, oh, like we never had to seek approval for it because there was never another Ebola outbreak. So like, what's the point? There was an Ebola outbreak in Guinea in February 2001. And there was a vaccine drive in Guinea, the place where they tested this vaccine. And where was the Gamaleya Center's vaccine? It was nowhere.
I'm sorry.
All right, no
There's an
worries.
earthquake in Skopje right now.
My gosh.
Well, it was very long. It's not very strong, but this
That's terrifying.
it just stopped. Yeah, the is sorry, just go on. You meant 2021 with the vaccine, right?
Yeah. So, fe so in February 2021. Sure.
Go on, Riley. I'll be, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Good luck. Stay safe. In February 2021, this vaccine. There was an outbreak of Ebola in Guinea, and where was the Gamaleya Center's vaccine? It had never. It was a perfect opportunity to prove how safe and effective this vaccine was. It was never approved. It was never brought, it was never actually, tested. It was never proven. Sputnik 5 doesn't have, it's just, there's just nothing here. Are you okay?
Yeah.
That's
No,
so
it's
weird.
it just crossed myself. It's a
My
minor one.
gosh.
It's a minor one. Just I'll tell the story after you're done. Yeah.
All right. So okay, anyway, you know, if you want to like read, it's sort of hard to like sort of process it all with someone talking, but if you really want to like break it down, you should just go to my blog, Edward Slav Squat, and I have like tons of articles just laying out all the facts. You can read it all for yourself. And it's crazy how unproven. That's what I'm gonna say. It's absolutely shocking how totally unproven this alleged viral vector platform is. It has never gone anywhere before Sputnik 5. Nowhere. Dead ends, like embezzlement scandals, nothing. Absolutely nothing. Another thing that you guys have to realize about Sputnik 5, there's this meme that Sputnik 5 is supposed to be this amazing, antidote to the big pharma clot shots, right? That's like the big thing you hear, right? It's like, oh, Sputnik 5 is this amazing 5D chess move by Russia to like save the world from Pfizer. Guys, the Russian government in the very first months of the COVID thing partnered with AstraZeneca. They literally signed a cooperation agreement. They produce AstraZeneca in Russia. They held joint trials with AstraZeneca where they mix Sputnik 5 and AstraZeneca. And the original plan was to introduce an AstraZeneca Sputnik cocktail in Russia. And there are, you can read the transcripts on Russian state media of Vladimir Putin hailing this cooperation agreement, saying that it's gonna, you know, it works towards a common goal and how it's a wonderful example of cooperation, et cetera, et cetera. It gets even worse because, okay, you can make the argument like, okay, they signed these things. They didn't know how dangerous AstraZeneca is, which is, it is dangerous, by the way. It's a fucking clot shot. And you can say like they didn't know. How would they know? In August, so August 2021, most recent August, in Argentina government started mixing Moderna and AstraZeneca shots with Sputnik. The reason they did this was because they ran out of Sputnik. So when a lot of people got their first dose, it was Sputnik. They didn't have enough Sputniks. So like, all right, we're giving you Moderna, we're giving you AstraZeneca. And the head of the Russia Direct Investment Fund, this guy, Kirill Dmitriev, who is a real character, we can talk about him. Russia Direct Investment Fund, it's the financer, it's the state sovereign wealth fund of Russia. And he finances Sputnik 5, this organization. He comes out and he says, oh, no, this is cool. This is what we wanted to do. Sputnik 5 was designed to be combined with other drugs, even with Pfizer, even with Moderna. And in October, last October, Dmitriev came out and announced that they were holding joint trials with Pfizer and Moderna. So if Sputnik 5 is this like master 5D chess move by Russia to save the world from the clot shots, how do you reconcile these realities? You just can't. You just can't. And this is already in October and August when it's obvious. It's obvious that these big pharma shots are poison. Yeah, I mean, I can just keep rambling, but maybe someone has a question, or I mean, there's just so much to talk about. I can
Well,
get into other aspects.
there is a comment on maybe you should clarify. So to you, when you say Anatoly Chubais, and to Russians, it's clear, to people who follow in Russia's internal politics, it's clear who Anatoly Chubais is. But if you can give us like the elevator pitch on Anatoly Chubais, who the man is. I believe he's one of the oligarchs, one of the big name oligarchs, or
Yeah, he's like one of the most, like when you hear like the word, the term Russian oligarch, you should
yeah.
think Anatoly Chubais. He's like the stereotypical Russian oligarch who's been, he goes back to the Yeltsin era. He's like early 1990s. He's the big guy with privatization where he just basically, I mean, he's like one of the biggest thieves in Russia, like objectively. And you mentioned Chubais to anyone. It doesn't matter whether they like Putin or not, or if they're a Navalny fan or whatever. Everybody hates Chubais. He's a scumbag. Like,
That
really,
is
like, just objectively.
the most popular show on Russian television. Everyone hates Chubais.
Everybody hates Chubais.
No, I mean, growing up in the Balkans in Eastern Europe, I'm very familiar with the figure of the oligarch. I did not know who Anatoly Chubais is, but from people commenting on your blog, just from the context of what they were saying, I'm saying, I don't need to know who this guy is. I know his kind, you know.
Oh, so if we're unless you have a question, I think it would be cool to segue into Gref. Do you know about Hermann Gref?
Hermann Greff. Okay, red pill
The
me on Hermann Greff.
Oh man, you're gonna love this. You're gonna love this. All right,
I'm gonna love
so
this. Okay.
you're gonna love this, trust me. So Hermann Gref is the CEO of Sberbank. So it's the largest bank in Russia. It's majority owned by the Russian government. Gref is such an interesting character and plays such an interesting role in this whole Sputnik 5 saga, and most people have no idea about it. So it's absolutely fascinating because you go back to the earliest days of the whole COVID scam back in February of 2000, before people were even talking about vaccines. And Gref came out, and this is in Russian state media, like Interfax. And he said, I want to meet with the Russian government and talk about two things. I want to talk about funding a drug to, combat coronavirus. And I also want to talk about funding development of a technology that will recognize masked faces. So, like facial recognition that works even on people wearing masks. For some reason, this was like a really high priority for Hermann Gref, the CEO of Sberbank. Anyway, Gref ends up funding Sputnik 5. He gives money to Gamaleya, and he says that Sberbank was involved in technology transfer. He's like, oh yeah, we worked in technology transfer for Sputnik 5. I mean, whatever that means, I don't even know. This
So
guy claims, yeah.
the technology for the quote unquote vaccine was given to Gamaleya by this gigantic bank.
Okay, my understanding is he meant it in the sense that, like, allegedly it's like they made the vaccine and now they have to figure out how to like transfer the technology to manufacturers. I don't know. He's not very specific about it. So it's a very weird statement to make. Anyway, Gref is also one of the first people in the world to allegedly be injected with Sputnik 5, which is quite an amazing accomplishment. It's like one of the most wealthy, powerful guys in Russia, and he's just gonna volunteer himself for a COVID vaccine. Why? He alleges that he got it in like April 2020, which would make him like it would literally make him one of the first people in the world to get it, because phase one trials didn't start until June of 2020. So we're talking about several months where it wasn't even available for clinical trials. Another really interesting thing is like what else? I gotta pull up my Gref file. This guy,
You got files on all of these people. I'm
okay.
impressed.
I forgot the best part. I forgot the best part. I forgot the best part. Sberbank got exclusive. He got a secret order was issued by Russia's prime minister in December of 2000. I guess it was December of 2020. Designating Sberbank as the sole distributor of Sputnik 5, the distributor, a bank distributing this vaccine, and he was charged. He was given a contract. It wasn't Sberbank, it was a subsidiary that was made specifically to transport the vaccine. And they were responsible for delivering, I think, like the first 8 or 9 million doses of Sputnik 5 around Russia. And then that contract was given to like Rostec or something, like another sort of government conglomerate. This guy, though, the reason why I bring this up is that it's not that it's just really weird that a bank would be like involved in like so intimately involved in the development of this vaccine. is that Greff himself is such a scumbag. And in September of 2020, they changed the name of Spare Bonk to just Spare. And the reason for that is because they developed what he calls a universe of services. So there's like spare food, spare AI, spare delivery, like spare music. It's like something from some weird dystopian sci-fi. He wants to develop a cryptocurrency with JP Morgan called Spare Coin. This guy has his finger in like every single Russian pelmeni. Like he's all over the place. He is working on biometric ID systems that are being installed in Russian schools starting this year in Moscow. By the end of the year, they're installing these, like, what I guess are going to be spare developed biometric recognition systems in Russian schools. And some of them already have them.
Statcast.
And they also do the temperature check to make sure that you're not sick, right? Because, COVID.
German Griff is watching you
So
masturbate.
I don't know, like it's hard to know because, at least in the ecosystem that I sort of like live in the internet, a lot of people talk about how all this stuff is connected with like, this World Economic Forum, Great Reset, mumbo jumbo. And Hermann Greff is like the perfect example of this. Not to mention, he's a board of trustees member of the World Economic Forum and like hangs out with Klaus Schwab all the time, I mean, he's like the epitome. If you were going to make the argument that like the World Economic Forum is like this sketchy organization that's involved with all this stuff, Hermann Greff is the most obvious villain you could think of. Like, I can't think of another human on Earth who is more obviously like connected with this sort of, fourth industrial revolution, great reset, like use COVID as an excuse to crash the economy and make robots do everything. He's like intimately connected in all this stuff.
How consolidated is the Russian economy into Sber and other type entities?
I mean, that's a
Because I
really
mean,
good question.
I from the 90s, I grew up in the 90s, and all I could hear is, oh, the oligarchs in Russia, it's like seven men controlling the entire economy of a country of 200 million inhabitants, how many hundred million inhabitants, largest country in the world, biggest oil exporter, seven men run this thing. How is this even possible? You ask yourself. And we have heard a lot. I mean, we're getting off topic with regard to the COVID. I don't know how much you know about this, but we hear it many times that Putin brought the oligarchs under control, that they're no longer destroying or robbing Russia. What I'm getting here is that men like Anatoly Chubais, Kirill Dmitriev, and Hermann Greff, like you point out, that's a German name. Now, whether he's German or not, we won't get into that. But they're still calling the shot. Chubais is one of these people from the 90s. He's a Yeltsin creature. How consolidated is the Russian economy? How consolidated is Russia? Is it still the oligarch era there?
It is, of course. It's just the oligarchs who survived, who just weren't weeded out. And the reasons for that, I'm not an expert in, but of course. I mean, if people think that there aren't oligarchs that have, I mean, basically, I mean, have tremendous, tremendous influence and power in Russia, I mean, I've got bad news for you. Like, they exist. They're still here. They're still doing their thing. Another really funny thing about Greff, I gotta mention this to you because I think you're gonna love it. So I gotta even pull this up and read it to you directly because it's so outrageous. So Greff in 2012 gave this speech at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. And he was the moderator of this panel discussion talking about like, is the internet a good thing or a bad thing? Like this idea at the time was like, crowdsourcing solutions, blah, 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 all that mumbo jumbo. And so, of course, all the panelists don't want to say anything bad about, people power. So they're saying, oh yeah, the internet does good things. It was all this boilerplate bullshit. And so Grant takes the microphone and he's like, I can't believe what you're, I'm just gonna read this. This is what he says. You are saying terrible things. You are proposing to transfer power into the hands of the population. If each person can participate directly in management, then what are we managing? And then he goes on to say, people don't want to be manipulated when they have knowledge. What does it mean to remove the veil from the eyes of millions of people and make them self-sufficient? How do you manage them? Any mass control implies an element of manipulation. This is the CEO of Sberbank, who 10 years later is like literally controls almost all aspects of Russian life. I mean, not in such like a like insane way, but it's coming. Like you can
Right.
tell what the plan is here. And so about that
I mean,
speech, Graf later said he was.
if I were writing a novel or a screenplay and I put
Yes.
that speech in the mouth of the villain, it would be like, no, send it
Right.
back. This is like snidely whiplash levels of villainy.
Exactly. Okay, so afterwards it was a huge scandal. Like even mainstream Russian business press like Vedomosti and stuff were like, Graf has gone crazy. And so Graf responded saying, oh no, it was just a joke. I was just joking, guys. He was like, I was trying to cultivate conversation. I wanted to have some lively discussion. It's like, all right, whatever, whatever, dude. Like, whatever you say,
This
whatever you
is
say.
I guess it's a theme of the whole COVID tyranny, right? All of these people who are at the head of the enemy, at the head of all the people trying to stomp on our start trying to stomp their boots on our faces, be it Klaus Schwab, Hermann Graef, Anatoly Chubais, again, like the people have been looking up. Our courageous moderators are dumping information on Hermann Graef and Anatoly Chubais in the chat, and Kirill Dmitriev. Thank you for that, Gadius. He's another one, and it's Bill Gates and it's Anthony Fauci and even the local executors of the will of the enemy. They're just ridiculous people. You look at Klaus Schwab and you look at, okay, this is snidely whiplash levels of villainy. I don't know if you
It really
saw,
is.
I really love that film, Dudley Do-Right with Brendan Fraser. It's just, but I was an attorney for 6 years. And let me tell you, most criminals are more subtle than this. They can pass for normal people.
Right.
I know a lot of criminals. They are more human than these. These are just cartoon cutouts right now. And I'm thinking maybe it's all a big show precisely for this reason, but maybe these people really are like that. I don't know what to think anymore.
Guys, about I totally agree about Kirill Dmitriev. Some funny facts about. So the Kirill Dmitriev is the CEO of the Russia Direct Investment Fund. He's the dude which finances Sputnik 5. So you'd think, oh, this guy must be some really cool based Russian investor helping the motherland. This guy is alum of McKinsey, all right, like one of the major consulting firms of the world, an ex Goldman Sachs banker, Harvard educated. And he's a World Economic Forum Young Global Leader from 2009.
A
And
pattern starts to
this is the
emerge.
guy shilling Sputnik 5 and telling you to mix it with Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca. Like, I wonder why. It's like, guys, it's just so, and again, I don't want people to like think I'm trying to, it's hard. And I feel like there's so much just there hasn't been a lot of like serious thinking and investigation into Sputnik 5. And so a lot of people are like, oh my God, how could this be possible? First of all, this is just the reality. And it's just so blatant. It's just really, really blatant with Sputnik 5. It really is. And if you're basically what I'll say is if you're suspicious about the big pharma clot shots, which you definitely should be, there's absolutely no reason to trust Sputnik 5. Absolutely none.
Right, thank you for that, Riley. We have people in the chat. They're saying that Novak Djokovic will be tried in Australia in about an hour. And have you been following the Novak Djokovic saga in Australia?
A little bit, yeah. Crazy.
Okay,
It's like
that's
psychotic.
a lot of. I mean, I have mixed opinions about it, but that's not the topic of discussion because we have donations on entropy. People have been donating on entropy, and well, they expect their questions and comments to be read out loud. And so Bartleby, he sends us 10 American dollars, And he asks, what is the chance that Putin is in fact a robot and will live forever? I think this is a serious question. It's one of those tough geopolitical ones. So let's get our thinking caps on.
Well, you know, a big meme. This is true. A big meme on the internet is like Putin is a clone, right? That like there's been like 10 Putins or whatever. They're like a lot of people, I'm not even kidding, like even a lot of like pretty intelligent people are like, Putin died like in 2000. Like it's a new Putin. But guys, I don't know. I don't know, man. I think it's the same guy. I think he just got like some, you know, what is it? Plastic surgery, did a few pull-ups or something. I don't know what's going on, but he might be a robot. Anything's possible. I'm honestly after the COVID stuff, everything's on the table. Everything. I don't care what you say. I'm like, yeah, it's possible. I don't know.
Pontic Crusader in the regular chat, in the Odyssey chat, says Putin is half vampire, and apparently there are similar rumors about Joe Biden. My personal opinion is there was a game, a strategy game, when I was growing up, when I was young. It was called Empire Earth. And in the Empire Earth campaign, the Russian campaign was about Gregor, I forget his name, and he becomes the leader of Novorossiya, which is not Novorossiya as we understand it now, but the new Russian state. And he's eventually replaced by his robotic bodyguard in the year 3002, I believe. And the robotic bodyguard's name is Gregor II, and he just wears the guy's face because, you know, why wouldn't he do it? And that somehow helps Russia in some strange way. I don't know how it does. But it was the 90s. It was the time for weird games. It was a phenomenal game. I loved it. I loved playing it. Sadly, you know, I remember internet cafes. I did not have it on my own computer, so I had to spend a lot of money to play it. And it's just one of those things. And as for Mr. Putin himself, I have heard rumors that he is of partial German descent. And that would explain his longevity. I believe the strongest people on the planet are German-Slavic hybrids, such as myself. Good genes. I'm basically indestructible. No earthquake, no flood, no government persecution will stop me. I have used this head to break open a total of 4 doors so far. One of them was actually made of steel. Okay, no, it wasn't.
My gosh.
They were all wood. But yeah, it's a very hard head. I've cracked open tiles with it. That's not something I should boast about, I think. And we have more questions on, I think it's a question. No, it's a comment. Michael57DE, he sends us $15 American dollars.
Oh,
he
nice.
Says, hail Nick, hail Riley, hail the gods. Nick, you need to introduce this guy to Tim Murdoch of White Rabbit Radio. Tim favors the Sputnik vaccine over all the others because it's quote-unquote old school, not mRNA.
No, don't do that.
Yeah, I think Tim would be very surprised to hear what this guy has to share. Well, thank you for that, Michael. I will say this. A little birdie tells me that someone may have already sent Mr. Riley's email to Tim Murdoch and may have already suggested to Mr. Murdoch that Riley appear on his show. As for you know, the safety of the poll. Let's comment on this. We know from, I don't know if you've been following, I have been following Jean-François Gariepy, who is a neurobiologist, and he has been he's been appearing on Frodi Midjord's, I think he calls them Guiding the Storm now, shows, and talking about the pandemic. There are 3 episodes, fact-checking with the pandemic with JF, Frodi Midjord and Jean-François Gariepy. And JF has mentioned before that the Sputnik vaccine is not old school, that viral vector is a relatively new technology, not as new as mRNA. But from what you're telling me, Riley, it is not tested. The 4 previous vaccines were also failures. Can you comment on this, that it's old school?
It's not old school. It's new school, and it's shitty school. Guys, don't take Sputnik 5. Okay, here. Don't take my word for it. Okay, look at Sputnik 5's safety record. Just do that. So, really interesting. situation in Russia. If you're American, if any Americans out there, and obviously probably Europeans know about this too, you have the VAERS system, right? Which is where you report vaccine death, suspected deaths and adverse effects. And there's a lot of controversy about it because it's like, okay, first of all, how reliable is it? I mean, I think there's a very strong argument to make, obviously, that it actually underreports how many, how dangerous these vaccines really are, because not everybody's reporting to them. Russia does not have a VAERS. Russia does not disclose post-vaccination complications. There is zero transparency when it comes to the vaccine program in Russia. And you'd have to wonder, why would that be if Sputnik 5 is this amazing, antidote to the big pharma clot shots? So we have no real reliable data in Russia, which is bad enough on its own. I mean, that's just like a that's disqualifying in my opinion. That's 100% disqualifying. If you are a government and you're mandating a vaccine, which the Russian government is, and you won't even share post-vaccination complications data, that's totally disqualifying. That's totally disqualifying. You lose. You lose the debate because you won't even have it.
There was no
If you
post-vaccination data on the Ebola vaccine either, right? That's
Right.
another thing.
Well, there's no, I mean, the Ebola thing is just, it's just a, yeah, there's just nothing because it was never really deployed in any meaningful way. If you look
Yeah,
at the
but there were
Sputnik,
2,000 people in Africa injected with it, right?
but I don't, I, there was never, yeah, it was never published. Nobody knows what happened with
No
that. You know, it's
follow-up.
like, no, absolutely not. If you look at the Sputnik 5 data or Sputnik V, whatever you want to call it, in countries that do use Sputnik 5 and do report adverse events, Sputnik 5 does not do that well. It usually ranks around the middle. Okay, it's maybe not like the worst, but it's never like the best. And actually, in Argentina, it's the worst. Argentina has Sinopharm, AstraZeneca, and Sputnik 5, and Sputnik 5 is by far, the worst when it comes to linked suspected adverse events, both minor and serious. So the data is not on your side either, guys. And if you took the time to like look into it, you'd be like, wow, this is like extremely sketchy. And so yeah, I mean, it's just there's just no, I just don't see the argument here for saying really the argument here is like, I like the Russian government, so I'm gonna take its vaccine. Like that's a really bad argument. It's like a really, really, really stupid thing to do to your health. So don't do it.
That's yeah. So there's your comments. You mentioned Sinovac and the other Chinese, what do they call it now?
It's like
Sinopharm,
Sinopharm, and Sinovac, something like that, right? There's a few
would
of
you
them.
know anything about that? We have very little
Yeah,
data.
there's nothing. There's nothing. And it's very, again, it's so interesting how these vaccines also seem to have quite a good reputation on the internet, even though nobody has any good information about them. You know, it's so bizarre. Like you have, I mean, I'm just sort of, I don't want to paint with such a wide brush, but so for example, just like in sort of the internet that I know, you have a lot of people who are very, very vocally opposed to the big pharma shots, the Pfizers, the Modernas, and 100% rightfully so, obviously. And then they just sort of, they don't say anything about Sputnik 5. They don't say anything about the Chinese vaccines. And maybe it's because they just don't have any good, reliable information. But I really do feel like some of it is this bias, like, oh, but it's like, but I love Putin and like Xi is so handsome and blah, blah, blah. It's like somehow, you know, there's this like cult worship that gets in the way of people's ability to just rationally, like, objectively look at the realities here. And unfortunately, that's a huge, it's so hard to get through to people when I'm trying to explain why if you should use the same standards for everyone. So like if you're gonna, you know, apply the microscope to Pfizer, let's do the same with Sputnik 5 and find like what do we find out? We find out really bad things, like really bad things.
That's another thing. I mean, we are rightfully criticizing Western governments for covering up data. with regard to the safety and efficacy of these vaccines. They are, I mean, they're persecuting doctors in Australia for recommending people not take them, for warning about these things. They are character assassinating doctors. I mean, Robert Malone has been put through the ringer, banned from Twitter, banned from LinkedIn for speaking out against this vaccine. And is something similar happening in Russia? How are doctors in Russia responding to this? And have there been persecutions of Russian doctors who speak
There's
out?
there it's quite yeah it, they're taking active measures to silence and intimidate doctors who speak out. And I actually recently went to a conference here in Moscow called Russia's Doctors for Truth, and they held this conference in Moscow, and a number of really top physicians in the country who have been very vocal on these issues came and spoke, and I actually interviewed one of them, this guy, Dr. Denis Ivanov, really, really interesting guy. And he just gave me the lowdown. And doctors are basically being, according to him, he's saying doctors are being basically pressured and ordered not to talk about adverse events linked to these vaccines. And the Russian government has publicly said that they will start investigating medical professionals who advise their patients against getting the vaccine. And the Russian government has even gone so far, the Russia's National Security Council has gone so far as to describe anti-vaxxers on the internet as like terrorists, basically. They say like these are they blame foreign, they say that it's like some sort of foreign op. So you see this similar language all around the world. It's not unique to
So
Russia.
the Russian government's argument is that anti-vaccination activism in Russia, anti-mandatory vaccination, specifically with regard to the Sputnik 5 and other vaccines, is a foreign op. That is the position of the Russian government.
Well, it's the position of some of the officials have spoken on this. Yes, they've literally said that. Really interesting. RT, not the international version that broadcasts in English, but the RT in Russian language, did this insane documentary called "Enemies of the People," which is, by the way, an old Stalinist term that they would use, before they line you up against a wall and shoot you. And it was this alleged expose of all these big, voices in Russia. A lot of them, like really honest, good, conservative people, doctors, people who had really legitimate, obvious concerns with mandating a totally experimental, unproven drug. And they put these people through the wood chipper and basically call them enemies of the Russian state. And this documentary, by the way, was basically done in close collaboration with Margarita Simonyan, who is the editor-in-chief of RT, who, by the way, is a total psychopath. And Margarita Simonyan, regularly on her Telegram channel, on Russian television, gets out on her little podium and basically says one of her messages was that if you're unvaccinated, you're killing children. She's also claimed that anti-vaxxers in Russia are linked to, like, it's like a Western op, more or less, that they're influenced by the West, that it's a plot to destabilize Russia. She has called for taking away the medical licenses of doctors who oppose the vaccine. So you absolutely have the same kind of basically these extortionary tactics that are being used to silence any kind of dissent, any kind of debate. There's no science going on here, guys. It's like if you don't like the vaccine, you're a terrorist. That's literally, I mean, to put it simply, that's basically the Russian position
Which
on this
is,
vaccine.
I mean, the
It's
closest
insane.
you have something to that in the West is Australia, which
Yeah,
is
yeah, yeah.
pretty
And
bad.
again, but I'm pretty sure even Australia has like a semi-decent reporting system. Russia has nothing. So they're not reporting anything, and then they're
They're
calling you a
not even
terrorist.
gathering the data.
They're not, well, maybe they are, but they're not sharing it. They're not sharing it. So they won't share the data. They won't discuss it with you. And if you question it, you're a terrorist.
That's very
And that's what's going
interesting.
on in Russia. Yeah.
That's this is a very interesting comment from Horatius 14 in the DLive regular chat. He says Russia gave people hope that there would be outside the global HOMO conspiracy, so they don't want to hear seriously negative things about it. But these are not just seriously negative things you're reporting, Riley. These are this is it's not like Russia is corrupt. We knew that. The
Right.
Russia has oligarchs. We knew that. Free speech is bad in Russia, which I think maybe on some counts it's freer than in the West, but we already knew that. This is Russia is implementing these exact same totalitarian measures as the West right now. And which what's okay, maybe the states in the West are less efficient, they're weaker than Russia. Russia's actually implementing with its full state strength right now. Let's talk about a little bit. We've had, of course, Endeavor, and I think you listened to that show. He told us a little bit about the situation where he is in St. Petersburg. He told us a little bit the situation of what he knows of other regions of Russia. But what is the state of lockdowns and vaccine passport and vaccine mandates in Russia? I don't think it's unified. It's still at the federal subject level, right?
Yeah, so still it's dependent on the regions, but what's happening right now is we're weeks away from a vote in the State Duma that will be on national QR code legislation. And so if this passes, and it's expected to pass starting in February, there will be basically universal QR codes, standardized system across Russia. Now, there's already And I think that your guest Endeavor mentioned the situation in Kazan, which is quite strict. They have QR codes and transportation. That being said,
Is that done at the municipal level in Kazan, or is it across the entire Republic of Tatarstan?
I think it's the entire republic, but don't quote me on that. But I do think that it's universal. The interesting thing, though, and again, maybe. Well, okay, I'm going to come back to Kazan, but let me first talk about other places. In St. Petersburg, which has started introducing some QR codes back in autumn, recently ratcheted up its QR code system, and now they require them for cafes, a lot of shops, shopping centers, things like that, which has been quite scary. I mean, this is Russia's second largest city. That now is basically under the QR code yoke. What I want to say, and I hope this maybe ties back to that previous comment about how maybe people are depressed and don't want to hear what I have to say. I don't mean to be, I'm not trying to black pill people. But what I mean by that is, I really do think that if people knew the truth about Russia, and started talking about what's happening here, it would give people a lot of hope. Because while the Russian government is implementing everything that is being done in the West, the Russian people absolutely oppose this stuff. It's undeniable. There are multiple polls. There's one with 1.4 million people, an online poll, where 91% of the respondents said, "We don't want these QR codes. We don't need them. They're unconstitutional. They're stupid." Another one I've seen that has, I think, around 350,000 was also 91%. Even Russian state media, I think RIA Novosti, had a poll where 70%, something like 65, 70% said they didn't want them. So you go back, let's go back to Kazan. They have them in the transportation system. You need them for buses and stuff. My understanding is that it's been a total fiasco, total disaster. And they tried to enforce it, and like bus drivers were getting beaten up. They were quitting like on en masse, like they just couldn't even do their job anymore. And that basically they don't even enforce it anymore. I have a friend who was in Kazan, maybe 2.5 weeks ago, and she reported to me that she was on like two or three different buses, and not a single time she was asked for her for a QR code pass. You go back to St. Petersburg, there is some enforcement, but I've heard really mixed things, and there's a lot of businesses who are just going to look the other way, which I think is not really what's happening in like France or like other European countries where they're pretty strict about it. And there's even business. There's a really popular businessman in St. Petersburg who operates like a huge chain of businesses, all kinds of stuff. And he's been openly opposing all the COVID restrictions since the very first lockdown. And he's openly stated, like, I'm boycotting this. And he's collecting a group. He's compiled like a group of, business leaders to boycott these measures. And, this system is suicide for small businesses if it stays in place. Like, absolutely. So I think that a lot of Russian business people realize that they just don't have a choice here. They just have to ignore this. They have to do something because otherwise it's over for them.
Right.
And again, it's like, that's why people should care about Russia. And I'm not trying to blackpill people. I'm telling you, the Russian people, like, should inspire you. But people have to talk
Right.
about it. People are just ignoring it. They're just pretending it's not happening, but it is happening. And it would be great if more people were like, this is bullshit. And even Vladimir Putin has publicly stated that he supports these QR codes, even though 70 to 90% of Russians don't want it. The Russian health minister just came out with this interview, this hilarious interview where someone asked him, like, oh, like, are we going to be able to meet, without vaccine passports? And he said, like, what's wrong with vaccine passports? Like, it's just a new thing. It's like new clothing or new food styles. You just have to adapt. He literally said that. It's like so humiliating and so embarrassing. It's such a slap in the face. And but you have to understand, it's like, okay, it's really shitty. It's really shitty that this is happening to Russia, but the Russian people absolutely oppose it. They absolutely oppose it. And it's not just like they're grumbling on Twitter. They in everyday life, they just like they're not wearing the masks. They're not doing the social distancing. They don't want it. They haven't wanted it since like day one. So that's why people should care, and that's why people
There
should be like,
is.
yeah.
I think what you're saying is there is serious pushback on the ground level in Russia against these
Okay,
mandates.
so it's different pushback though. So it's not like what you see in France where people are marching through the streets every weekend, right? It's not, it doesn't take that. You don't see anything like that because the way that Russians are pushing back, so they just ignore the rules. They just don't do it. So like I go to my local shop, you're supposed to wear a mask in the supermarket. Nobody wears a mask. Nobody asks you to wear a mask. Nobody cares. You go even on the metro, which they allegedly enforce mask wearing. I mean, people either do like the chin strap, wearing the chin on the mask under the chin. It's so stupid, And again, with the QR codes, I mean, there's a lot, I guarantee that in St. Petersburg, there are a lot of businesses that are looking the other way. And at least that's what I've heard from people on the ground there. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting you commented. It's a very Western thing, right? It's a Northwestern European thing specifically to be law-abiding even when the law is insane. Whereas, in the Russian context or, here in Macedonia in the Balkans, if people are inconvenienced by a law, even if it's not unjust, if they're inconvenienced by it, they will ignore it.
Yeah.
And if they're caught by a cop, their first instinct is to bribe the cop. It does not lead to functional states, but in these cases, when there's a globalist force trying to impose tyranny, because they have to work through the intermediate layer of the state apparatuses, it buys us some time and even gives us a chance to respond. And of course, when the state tried to impose these things on us, I counsel people in Macedonia to not engage in protests, which were immediately subverted and just infiltrated by all sorts of people here. And some of it, they attracted genuine kooks because there are always a couple of genuine kooks floating around every time you mention anything bad about vaccines. It's just a fact of life, people.
Just a fact, just a
Right.
fact.
But the main reason is do not give an honest fight to the government. A protest is something they can break apart, infiltrate, or frame as, foreign interference.
Right.
But non-compliance, very quiet, very calm non-compliance, they cannot really fight that. I mean, in the West maybe, but in the East. So it's going to take different approaches wherever you are. So I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear that the Russian people are, for the time being, not complying with these mandates, that there is grassroots resistance to it. I'm greatly disappointed that the Russian state is actually doing this. People are always saying Vladimir Putin is a populist. He regularly has these 60% approval polls, 70% approval. But this could sink him. Do you think this could? seriously damage Vladimir Putin?
Absolutely. And again, I say this as someone, I don't really, I'm an American, so it's like he's not my
Right.
president. But I would say to anyone though who supports Vladimir Putin, like whether you're Russian or not, it's like if you really support Vladimir Putin, the best thing you could do for Vladimir Putin is like do everything you can to get him to like raise awareness about this and stop what's happening. Because if there is any sort of social unrest, who's going to be the fall guy? It's going to be Vladimir Putin. And there's a
Right.
lot of concern, and I think legitimate concern, that in a way, what the policies that are being pursued by Russia could even be, what could end up happening is that it totally destabilizes and destroys Russia. Putin goes, and then he's replaced by some sort of, like someone even more like a real goon, that it's just a way to basically just flush Putin out and put someone else in. And I think that's a possibility.
You think that, I mean, we saw if the thing in Kazakhstan ends up benefiting America, the CIA, whatever, we have to understand that there was real dissatisfaction with the Kazakh government, right? Something very similar to it can happen in Russia, from what you're telling me.
So, not to pimp my blog, but I republished an article that a Russian article on this site, Katusha, which is really interesting, a website. And they wrote this really interesting article basically saying if Putin was smart, the lesson you learn from Kazakhstan is stop doing what Kazakhstan is doing. Stop with the forced vaccines, stop with the QR codes, stop letting this corrupt, incompetent elite run rampant in Russia, because you are setting the conditions where there could be genuine widespread unrest, and that, discontentment could be harnessed by, nefarious forces. And the thing is, like, people always talk about, like, oh, we have to stop the color revolutions, the CIA, blah, blah. These cannot exist if there isn't real, genuine dissatisfaction with the government. So if
Right.
that's really your number one concern, like people should be more like self-aware and be like, all right, like, yeah, Russia's fucking up. Like Russia should stop fucking up and we don't have to worry about this stuff.
It's I want maybe we can circle back to what we discussed at the beginning, but you see people in the quote unquote Russophile and Russian media, they dismiss everything. Every kind of dissatisfaction about these regimes as, oh, that's just foreign. But there is real dissatisfaction. And unless the concerns of people are addressed and the concerns of stakeholders within the state are addressed, you're basically hand you're sending ammunition to your enemy.
Yeah, no, of course. Of course.
The people are, I mean, my favorite example is Yugoslavia. People are saying, oh, the CIA busted up Yugoslavia with their evil psyops. I say to them, first of all, no, it was not the CIA that destroyed Yugoslavia. And this is actually very well documented. The American state supported Yugoslavia well into 1992. I've had Dr. Tomislav Sunic, who is Croatian and used to be a diplomat in Croatia, on this show before. He's testified to that effect. But another thing is, Yugoslavia could be destabilized and was unstable because it was insane as a concept. It's you're going to take these six, seven different nations and glue them all together and force them all together and brutalize them if they want independence. You're just begging for someone to come and destabilize this country. It's a tragic thing. I mean, we live in a world where states compete with each other and exploit each other's weaknesses. And Putin has revealed a major weakness for Russia with these things. And of course, it's going to be exploited by outside forces. People are saying, oh, it's the Americans. It could very easily be the Chinese. I have mentioned on this show before, people have mentioned on other shows, there is an intense Sino-Russian conflict over Central Asia. Just because they have an alliance, it's not even an alliance. It's some sort of marriage of convenience to protect against American encroachment. Does not mean that China and Russia do not have a rivalry. I mean, the events in Afghanistan last year could have been an example of Sino-Russian tensions. There's definitely Sino-Russian tensions brewing. It could be the Chinese who are starting shit in Kazakhstan. There's even a theory that this is a Russian psyop because they want to have even tighter control of Kazakhstan, which is very interesting to me.
Sure, why not?
So anyways, I'm going to double check the Entropy Super Chats, and then we're going to segue into the last half hour of the show, which, okay, there are no new questions. There have been donations on DLive from Hadrian was right. He gave a diamond, and Old Man Yinzer donated one diamond, and Horatius 14 an ice cream. And of course, a Ninja Genie from Cozy James, who says that we're having a great show. Well, I agree. I think this show is quite great. And the number one reason is because I'm hosting it. But Riley's not not bad himself, I will say that.
Thanks, guys.
You have mentioned Riley.
Yeah.
And commenters of your blog had mentioned the quote-unquote Russophile media.
Yeah.
Now, I want to understand the phenomenon a little more closely. Now, I follow some of these people. Some of them are Russian. Some of them are not.
Yep.
But if you would explain the phenomenon to someone who may not be familiar with it.
Well, you know, I guess that probably a lot of it can be traced back to, you know, I guess what is commonly referred to as the Russian Spring, like this around when Crimea rejoined Russia, and there was this sort of exuberance on the internet. Some of it probably funded by the Russian government, to be perfectly honest, but you had all sorts of blogs and websites and analysts, and that's when they really, I mean, they've been around before that, obviously, but that's when they really started getting quite popular. There's this whole ecosystem of people from, not just in Russia, I mean, actually most of them, at least in English, are not from Russia. I mean, they're, you know, Canadians and Americans and stuff like that. They were, or maybe like sort of, you know, Russians who emigrated to, you know, other parts of the world. The problem with the Russophile media, or whatever you want to call it, the Putin-file media, maybe is even more accurate of a term, is that these people, unfortunately, have created an alternate reality where everything, it's literally impossible for Russia, for A, to do anything wrong, and B, to like, it's just, there's just no way that Russia, everything is turned into this, you know, 5D chess move by Russia. And it's really, really cringe. And I was talking to a friend about this recently, and he said, it's so interesting how, like, it's even more dishonest and pathetic than, like, people who, you know, are obsessed with, you know, a sports team, which, by the way, I don't think is pathetic or stupid. I mean, if you're a sports fan, cool. But what I mean by that is, like, you have, you know, these I don't know, like, websites or magazines that cater to a specific sports team, and people talk about, like, who's the best coach and what went wrong last season. The thing with this kind of analysis is that it's actually fact-based. It's like you can't pretend that your team won last season when it lost. It just wouldn't work. You'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? In Russophile media, you can literally take like an obvious L, like the biggest L possible, and be like, a brilliant, a 50D chess move by Putin again, like karate chopped the Zionists in the face. Like straight in the nutsack, just like, wah! You know, it's like, it's so stupid. It's so fucking stupid. And these people just take it, it's comical. It's like you're, it's like just like Kremlin erotica, you know? It's like people, you know how people like write those stories where like Harry Potter has sex with like Snape or whatever? It's like that. It's like,
please don't. It's like, it's a family show.
It's like really, really that bad. It's like really, really that bad. And it just, it's so disconnected from reality where when it comes time to be like, okay, like Russia has this vaccine, that's not very cool. Russia is implementing these QR codes, that's not very cool. Nobody will talk about it. No one will touch it. People are pretending that it doesn't exist. There are a lot of dudes on Russophile media. I mean, I don't want to name names because I don't, it's like, I don't know. I think it's bad form. But there's one big guy, very popular, who just lies. He just lies about Sputnik 5 and its efficacy and like literally everything. He just goes down the list and lies. And it's easy to disprove. And this guy gets paid like a lot of money on Patreon to just peddle these fucking stupid lies. And it's literally, it's just, that's just what it is. And it's sad because we should be talking about Russia. I mean, it's a really important country. And I know a lot of people are interested in it for a lot of different reasons. But the level of analysis is so lame. And people are just lying to themselves. They're just lying to them. Why are you lying? If you want to understand something, why are you lying to yourself? So yeah, that's my lecture on the Russian media.
Right. I'm also familiar with the phenomenon. We may share platforms with them when I'm writing in my off time. It's I read these things sometimes, and there is always a narrative of imminent victory.
Right? You're right. Imminent checkmate. Putin's gonna checkmate any second now.
Yeah, and it's very difficult because if you do that in sports or in a game like chess, right, which has definite parameters, which has definite rules. Now there are surprise upsets in sports and chess too. Let me just say that. But five moves before a checkmate, when you play chess, you can usually see it coming. I say this to someone who actually does play a lot of chess, too much chess, if I'm being honest. And real life is not like that. Geopolitical conflict is not like that. It's not ludic. I will use this opportunity once again to say, to shill Nassim Nicholas Taleb's work. I specifically recommend people read Anti-Fragile and Skin in the Game, and they will not do wrong to read Fooled by Randomness either. And you can also read The Black Swan. Just read everything the man has ever written. That's just the easiest way to do it. And he calls this thing the ludic fallacy, conflating real life with the game. You can also do the opposite, right? Conflate a game with real life. Real life, I mean, okay, so it's like chess. But in chess, you win. How do you win at life?
Right.
There is no definite permanent victory, even if Putin does get a W or an L against the enemy. There's always next time. Russia's not going to disappear off the map. America's not going to disappear off the map. It's not a game. It's something very different from the types of games you're used to. You mentioned that the type of, and also I mentioned it, the people who play these games, they're very cartoonish. They're maybe not quite human. It's because these happen so far beyond the regular human level. Like, think of the guys in the Cold War who used to do the nuclear exchange war games. And everyone who's met them, there is many podcasters who are actually a little bit long in the tooth. They have met these people running around Washington and Moscow. They mention these are very strange people. Like, many of them are autistic. Autistic like people on the internet are, genuinely
right
autistic.
Like really really autistic.
Right. I mean, I used to work with autistic children for a brief time in high school, and when I say autistic, I'm not kidding around. This is someone who's very different from a quote-unquote normal person.
Right.
You never forget when you meet an autistic person. That's what I'm gonna say. And where I'm going with all of this is they're trying to get you to support someone, right? And again, I keep coming back to the Kazakhstan thing. You have genuine grievances. People in the West, they have genuine grievances against their governments. I understand it. It's very bad in the West. It's also very bad in the East. These are people trying to instrumentalize you for their own ends, right? They're trying to take your genuine grievance and align it with their own ends, geopolitically or otherwise, if they're supported by the Russian state. If not, this is even sadder because they're doing this work pro bono. They're basically cheering for what, really? And,
right.
I have warned before, people have mentioned, okay, I'm not saying be against Russia. I don't want to be against Russia, but is Russia for me? Is Russia for my people? Is Russia for my cause ideologically? Or in this case, it's not even ideological. It's I don't want to be wearing this cattle tag, as you call them. I don't want to inject this poison into my body.
You're
I
right.
don't want to be made infertile, right?
Right.
This is a
and,
big
and,
risk.
And
with
Russia
these
just
vaccines.
propped up one of the worst governments doing all those things in the most extreme and horrible way, you know?
Right.
So, you know, yeah.
It's one of these things. I get these, and there's so much. I don't know if there's outright lying, but there's a lot of lying by omission in the Russophone media.
Tons of it. Tons of it.
And much of the issues we also had Endeavor. I mean, we also talked about Russia's internal demographic issues with Moscow being swamped by foreigners, essentially. Nobody mentions that in Russophile media. Nobody's talking about the low fertility rates. Nobody's talking about the abortion rates in Russia. In the Russophile media, they're trying to sell us to us, people who are right-wing nationalists in the West, that, oh, this is the promised land, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's all rainbows and sunshine, and if you read the Russophile media, but, like, guys, and again, I'm not trying to knock Russia. I mean, I like Russia a lot. I mean, that's why I'm here. It's like, basically at this point, I don't think I can leave Russia, just for a lot of reasons, but even if I wanted to, I probably just stick it out here, no matter what.
Before the corona tyranny, would you say that living in Russia was better than in the West?
Yeah, okay. So it's definitely better, but people should be really... there's a footnote at the bottom of that statement, which is it has nothing to do with the government and everything to do with the Russian people. The Russian government, if it could have its way, would stick 1,000 Sputniks up my butt. But like, it's not. But I live in Russia with Russians. They don't want it. So it's like I'm good, you know. But it's all due to the thanks of the Russian people, and the Russian government has been total trash on this issue. It really has. I hate to say it. I wish, you know, in the very first days when all the lockdown started and stuff and the borders were closed, you know, back in mid-March, I was so pompous and so self-righteous because Russia didn't implement a lockdown until like late March. And so I was like writing all these blog posts being like, ha ha, stupid, like stupid West. I've been like, Russia strong, I'm the best, you suck. And then like
did
5 days
did
later,
indulge in Poland bulls.
Of course. And then five days later, I'm like in the worst lockdown in the world. Like Moscow had one of the strictest lockdowns in the world. And then that's when I was like, oh shit, like I got hoodwinked. Like this was bad. So yeah, I mean I went through that process too, guys. Like I'm not trying to lecture down or like talk down to anyone. It's been like a big learning experience for everyone. I'm sure no matter where you are or what your perspective are, I mean, the last 2 years have been mind melting, like totally, totally mind melting.
Yeah. I personally have rethought a lot of the positions I've had. I mean, even with regard to not just geopolitics or medicine, like I heard someone say that, okay, knowing how much they lied about this particular vaccine, what makes you think that the older vaccines, that they did not lie about those? And what if those people I dismissed as crazy, you know, the anti-vaxxers,
right.
What if they were right?
Yeah.
Well, you got to think
and
about
I think that's legitimate.
A lot of people I actually know to be anti-vaxxers, I mean, before the corona, they did not seem crazy to me. They were actually very healthy and very successful people. It also was very interesting to me. I'm rethinking my positions on economics, and I hope a lot of people rethink, because we've been told that you cannot shut down the economy and everything
is
going
to...
And apparently it's possible. You know, you can just hollow out the middle of economic life.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Of course, we haven't fully seen the implications of what is about to happen economically. So, you know, stay tuned. If all corona tyranny disappears tomorrow, we will still have to reckon with the economic fallout. And all of these, things that have happened. We have several questions in the regular chat. We have Alyaska Chaga, who is a generous sponsor of this show, but I drank all of my chaga. So, you know, no more in the cup just because it's so delicious. He's donated a Ninja Genie on the live. Well, thank you for that. And people are asking, where can they find Riley's blog and his social media? Where can they follow you?
Oh, okay, cool. Thanks for asking. it's just some on Substack, and the URL, it's Edward, like EDWARD, Slav Squat, SLAVSQAT .substack.com. I'm right. Assuming if you just Google or Yandex or whatever you use, Brave, Chrome search or whatever, Edward Slav Squat, you should be able to find me, I hope. And then on Twitter, I'm on Twitter, Riley Wagaman.
Right.
You can find me there. I'm not on Facebook. I'm on Contactia. You can add me if you want. I don't use it that often, but please feel free to. I don't do that. You know, I Facebook made me suicidal, so I got off it like 2 years ago. So I don't know how people feel about it, but
I can sympathize. I mean,
I was all my family, my whole family, all my friends, everyone I knew were like these pro lockdown vaccine fanatics, and I was like, I want to throw myself out of a window. And
I thought you were being serious. I'm sorry.
It wasn't that. I mean, it was pretty bad though. I was pretty upset. It right. was an upsetting thing. It's an upsetting thing.
Right. I've been looking for someone to do a show on that subject. And just, are you familiar with the concept of a Rwandan radio?
No, that sounds like a cocktail or something.
No, it's actually. So they had during the Rwandan genocide of the Hutus against the Tutsis, they had radio stations which blasted 24/7 propaganda: kill the Tutsi, kill the animal, cut out the cancer, squash the bug. Yeah, it's like basically getting the Hutu tribesmen into a murderous frenzy. And the Rwandan genocide was not systematic. It consisted of a series of just one-on-one killings, for the most part. I mean, there was organized genociding, but it was very brutal, very up close and personal. And there is someone in our circle, Semiagog, who claims that basically social media are a more sophisticated form of Rwandan radio, that they are calibrated to drive us insane, to make us hate each other, and to fill us with this unresolvable conflict. And when you mentioned the Facebook, because I noticed when I was suspended from Twitter for a period, and now that everyone's been banned off Twitter and now it's incredibly boring and I don't use it, I feel saner. Like, I feel less angry. Feel less, my attention span is back, and I'm naturally a jumpy person, as you can see on the show, but I feel saner when I'm off these social media. Right. Yeah. So we only have 7 minutes left of this show, but I'm definitely looking into getting someone on this show for the explicit purpose of discussing this question of, are we getting crazier? Right. Yeah. I might even get a round table. Who knows?
Yeah, do it.
Do you have any opinions on that?
I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. I mean, I could talk about social media, the evils of social media, for a long time, I think. Like, I think it's, first of all, I think it's a way of for people just to self-validate, right? So, like, they'll just say the most boilerplate cliche bullshit just to get a like, and it's self-perpetuating, right? So, like, people catch on to what gets the likes and the attention, and people, it just turns into a massive circle jerk of just stupid, idiotic cliches. And people become afraid of, like, thinking anything different. Like, it's some sort of crime against humanity. Anyway, it's like, it's the whole thing. I hate it.
There's a couple of more questions in the regular chat. Does Mongolia align with Russia, from Belly 2451?
Or whoa.
Bail.
Yeah.
That's a really good question.
It's historically it did, but I don't know about right now.
I got a pass on that one, guys. I'm sorry. I don't know Mongolian-Russian security relations. I'm sure there's something, but
it's interesting. And
yeah, let's look into that.
Thoughts about Tucker here meaning Tucker Carlson calling out Ted Cruz. I know if you saw this, but
I haven't followed that. What happened?
What happened was Ted Cruz was talking about the January 6th events in America, where, you know, the Trump supporters
right.
got into
sure,
the
sure,
Capitol,
sure.
And he called it a terrorist attack. And Tucker said, "Well, hold on a second. This is not terrorist attack. I mean, I think he accused Ted Cruz of lying." Because Ted Cruz tried to get out of it by saying, "Oh, I didn't mean that," and Tucker reminded him that, "No, actually, you're lying."
Right.
Right. And you know, if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, I'm just restating the obvious here, but I mean, the January 6th stuff has been so blown out of proportion. I mean, it's becoming comical. Like, I feel embarrassed talking about it, but obviously, I mean, it's important because I mean, it's becoming a obviously, the move here, the 5D Biden move is to like the 5D chess is to like basically, you know, criminalize any kind of dissent, and they're going after like it's now it's the right the white domestic terrorist, right? Isn't that like the new meme? It's like, oh, it's the white guys with like the MAGA hats, like gotta Gitmo them. Which I get, isn't there like this prison where they're like keeping all these. These January 6th protesters, and they were like held for weeks without
And it's
anything.
they're still held,
yeah, it's
right? A
crazy.
year
Like, why don't
after.
people talk about that? Where's the ACLU or whatever? I mean, obviously they're not going to help, but it's like, what's going on?
The very interesting thing I heard about the January 6th protesters is the conditions they're kept in are so horrible and inhumane. They have been petitioned to be moved to Gitmo. Right, it's so bad. And there's,
oh
it's not
God.
Even supposed to be funny because these people are being tortured.
Oh my God.
I think loud music is played outside their cells so they can't sleep. They're
so
being
it, like,
fed.
It is Gitmo. It's like Abu Ghraib or something.
It's Abu Ghraib.
Are they doing the
levels,
naked, the naked pyramids? They're stacking them naked,
God,
electrocuting
I hope not.
Them. It's coming. Coming.
Yeah, it's yeah, but it's getting very close to Abu Ghraib levels of
yeah.
abuse for the January 6th detainees, and I don't think any of these people have even been charged, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
This is one of those things like Sam Francis called it: the process is the punishment.
Right.
They're not
right.
going to punish you formally, but they're just going to put you through the ringer of the process until you cry uncle, and
yeah,
it's. It's one of those things. So
it's scary, guys. It's scary. It's not even. We shouldn't even joke about it because it's really. It's bad. It's bad.
So there are some questions about Kazakhstan in the chat from Forensics of Evil. But Forensics of Evil, I'm very sorry. Riley said at the beginning that he's not an expert on Kazakhstan.
I'm not.
Kazakhstan
sorry,
apparently supplied Egypt with 5 million doses of CASVAC COVID-19 vaccine. And
oh yeah, they have this like halal. They have this halal that's domestically produced halal back. I'm not joking. It's like Muslim approved, but it's such a scam. So like, how does Kazakhstan have its own domestically produced halal COVID vaccine that's supposedly safe and effective? It's such a scam. It's just a massive global scam. And I bet more than anything, this is either 100% saline or it's just like AstraZeneca or Sputnik 5 just repackaged like as their halal. Vaccine. Anyway, yeah, it's like
that. And there's a question about did Hunter Biden meet Idrizov in Kazakhstan for Iran deal yellow cake? Like
don't,
you said
don't,
at the beginning.
Not, I'm not on that one. The last Hunter Biden thing was like the salacious photographs on his laptop doing crack with hookers. So I don't know anything about yellow cake uranium and Hunter Biden.
Right. So I think that's the we have exhausted the question. PO Box asks, do they have standing for violating their right to a speedy trial or standing to sue? I'm not a lawyer in America, so I cannot comment on that. But you should ask maybe Richard Hauck if the moderators would put the link to his show, and I think he answers legal questions over there. He's a friend of this show. He was on last time. So I think unless you have anything to add, Riley, we have exhausted all of the subjects. We can now wrap it up. We'd like to see
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I hope I was a tolerable guest, and
it.
yeah, it was fun. It's really, honestly, I mean this honestly, it's so nice, like, talking with people who are not, like, in your immediate circle of, like, internet people, you know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, like, there's other people on the internet, like, that we can talk to, instead of,
Well, it
like, the
used to be the
usual,
main
like.
draw. It used to be the main draw of the internet that there's a lot of different people on here.
Right, and you end up just, like, doing the same thing with, like, 15 people. You're like, is this it? Is this the entire internet? So I'm really happy you invited me. Always happy to come back. It was fun.
I have a feeling that we'll be seeing a lot more of you, Riley, in our circles from now on. I have, of course, as the viewer suggested, forwarded your contact information to Mr. Tim Murdoch of White Rabbit Radio. So, he runs a similar format show to this one, and you can expect to be probed very closely on all of these issues with regard to the Russian vaccine. But until then, this has been the Writer's Block. I'm Nick Gilvey, your friend and host. We have been here with Riley of Edward Slav Squat, the Substack blog, discussing issues in Kazakhstan, Russia, and COVID, and generally answering your questions. So until next time, people, thank you and take care.